Hello, welcome to Rainbow Shaman. I am Annette Lachmann and this is my podcast for shaman journeying.
Hello and welcome to Rainbow Shaman, the podcast with Annette Lachmann. I am Anna Janikov and today I'm going to talk to Annette, who is sitting next to me, about dealing with anxiety in these days and also about ways of conveying spirituality to children and teenagers. Hello, Annette. How are you?
Hi, Anna. Nice to be with you again.
Great. Annette, these days we have to deal with big uncertainty. We are confronted with big challenges. And there are many spiritual teachers who have different approach talking about these days. I wanted to ask you, what is your view on all this, all dealing with this certain pandemic situation from a shamanic and also from a spiritual point of view?
The anxiety, which is among us at the moment, of course, caused by uncertainties, situations that we do not control at all, is something which is really influencing our everyday life. And there's of course a lot of advice how to deal with fear, how to deal with disease, the pandemic, and in my practice, I have a lot of people who have also anxieties about their jobs, their parents maybe being afraid of death. I mean, this is all omnipresent, so to speak. So the main thing is, I mean, that's how I feel, that we need to cope with the fear, and it's not about denying it, and it's because fear is actually causing so much stress. So we of course try to calm down. It's not to deny that there is a disease or a pandemic, but it's to more be aware, to be conscious about it, and to see, what does that have to do with me? How can I cope with my fear? I have to look at my fear and transform it into something less threatening, probably.
I understand. Now, a lot of people think a lot about the restrictions or have to deal with it. Do you also see certain chances that are brought through this state of emergency and this different state that we are in right now?
Absolutely. Because we know in every situation, in every crisis, there's always an aspect which is a chance or which can be an opportunity to change the perception, to change something in your life. Because now, I mean, there's a lot of people which are in this so-called fight and flight mode, meaning When there's fear or stress, your system reacts with either you're going to fight or you have to run away from it. And during this pandemic, a lot of people fall into the third version, which is freeze. Because they freeze because they're not in control. They can't do anything about the outer circumstances. We have restrictions, we have that, we cannot go out. But then you had also time to see what is the chance? What can I do? What can I change? For example, is there anything new? Something I always wanted to do maybe, and now I have the time because I'm not going out so much. I have to be at home and maybe reflect. So I would think that if we look also for the chances within the crisis, there is always something which might help you. Like maybe you find a new way of being creative, like singing or for yourself or writing or painting or reading. So I think like the shamanic way is it's how you see and perceive things. So if we perceive something as terrible, as really terrible, and as really being the end of the world, then it will be the end of the world for us. But if we transform it into this way, yes, I know it's something going on which is restrictive and stops me in a certain way, but I see it as a chance to do something else, to be more with my family or to do something I always wanted to do, like writing my book or going for walks when you usually don't have time for that.
Yeah, this is another question. You mentioned family. Do you also think this is a new chance to focus more on relationships and maybe, you know, also have to rely on help and being there for each other? Do you think this is also like a chance, you know, for this focus in life?
I agree. That is a chance. I mean, of course, many people were so challenged. Like if you have a family with three small children and they're not going to school, and then suddenly you have these unhappy children at home and they're really wild. In the beginning, everything was really nice. But after a couple of weeks, this is so stressful for the whole family to suddenly be together. So you have to learn how to deal with that too. But also it's a chance to see how can I help? How can we support each other? And I think this, we are together in this. This is a perception which is a reality, and how can we support each other? What is possible? I mean, there's so many people thinking of something, like when the elderly people, they're alone in their homes and the grandchildren cannot really visit because of the restrictions. So I have so many people doing all kind of things with writing and singing and doing Zoom sessions. And it's of course not nice for families not to hug each other, because we need to be touched, we need to have also the physical closeness. I mean, to touch and hug and be with someone, this is essential for all of us. And so we need to deal with not having this. But we have a restricted moment, and we should at least focus on the ones we can be with.
Yeah, that's a good point. You mentioned family and also children. I think these days children also suffer a lot from some pandemic restrictions, wearing masks, for example, in school. And then there's also a lot of information and a lot of information through media. So what do you think, what do you suggest about dealing and sharing information with children? Do you think we should filter information or maybe keep children away from a lot of consume of media? Or what do you suggest? How would you deal with your own children? I know they're older now, but if they were younger, for example.
Well, I think first of all, it is important that we as parents don't put so much emphasis on fear, because children, they are so easily influenced by fear. And we don't want to create fear for our children. But on the other hand, I'm not denying it, saying it's not there. I mean, there is something going on and they feel it, they sense it. But if I also, I personally would, of course, try to restrict this social media kind of influence, especially on smaller children, and not having my television on the whole time. So on every channel is always fear. So, I mean, I would try to find like a mixture of, yes, information, it exists, but also not being afraid, because I am not afraid. I'm aware. And this is the difference if you're aware or if you are afraid. And with the children, I would maybe in these times really focus on also go outside with the children, let them connect to nature as much as I can, because we don't have the lockdown that we cannot leave. I think this is the time where I would really try to take my children to be grounded outside, like from the shamanic way, we connect to the earth, to the nature, to let children experience the power of trees or standing by the sea, by the river, by a lake, touching the ground, even in autumn, playing with the leaves. I mean, I would really emphasize that they go outside.
Now, that's interesting that you mentioned it, because I wanted to talk to you also generally about spirituality in kids and children's life. I'm interested in, like, did you let your children take part in shaman ceremonies or practices?
Yes, I did. Even my teenage son was taking part in ceremonies and despachos, or he did this in a sweat lodge already. But also I have a lot of younger children now which come because they feel they need protection. And you know, we have these shamanic protections, like giving them the bands of protection or giving them a power animal, so they feel they have a support, a strength from a power animal, for example. And children really respond so well to ceremonies, to sit in ceremonies. And I was amazed. I mean, I have like 7-year-old, 5-year-old, 9-year-old, 12-year-old. It's always a different stage, and I respond to the needs of these children. But they all have something in common. Mostly they can engage in this magic which still exists with nature and spirit beings. So they're not afraid to feel differently, to allow magic to happen. And that's what I use. I use this natural search for magic in their life to introduce them to some spiritual experience.
Now, you mentioned the ceremony of sharing or giving the protecting, what did you call it?
So can the bands of protection.
The bands of protection for the listeners who don't know the ceremony. Can you tell a little bit about it?
Mm-hmm. The shamans of the Andes, they gave us these bands of protection, and they're part of the rites of the so-called Munaiki, great initiations, and there are energetic bands consisting of a black band, which is the earth, a red band, the water, gold band, the fire, silver band, the air, and the white band, the light energy. And they're woven into your energy field as a shield. So when heavy energy comes towards your body, your physical body, one of these elements will just break down this heavy energy and transform it to energy that nourishes you and doesn't make you sick or weak any longer. And they are given to us as seeds, and you need to feed them for a couple of weeks with fire, through a flame or water. And children, usually they love that. And they're, for example, I have a family coming, and then the children always remind the parents, oh, we need to feed our bands. So they really truly believe. And you know, in all medicine, it's always the one who heals is right. And if the children believe it, you can call it placebo effect. It doesn't really matter, because it really, they feel protected. And this is the main thing, that in a world where so much fear, if they feel protected, it's so great for them to have these bends. And then maybe give them a stone. And they are so creative. I let them create something for themselves, like a ceremony. And they're so into it. Music. I have children here who learn so easily to use sound bowls. They can play with all of my instruments. And I teach them how to generate energy for themselves. And it's with children so easy, because they are naturally still connected to the earth. And it's very easy to wake up this ability to connect to the earth and also to the universe. When you show them, I have several 7 to 9-year-old children who can do this. And I was so surprised how strong they can generate that energy. And I think if we allow children not to fall asleep, because if you don't support these abilities once they get into puberty, they will not lose it, but it will really go to sleep. It's a dormant quality, and then you can wake it up, this quality, later. But if you do this from the beginning, include them in ceremonies. And I have a lot of shaman students who introduce their children to this medicine, and these children, they are amazing. They are amazing.
Great. I also think this is, a big gift, you know, for children once they have, they are in touch with this, let's say, magic and also the spirits. But another question that I also have heard from some parents is how to convey spirituality to children without putting a certain dogma into it. How, you know, like telling one thing as the absolute truth, since they might want to find out their own truth. Do you have like an advice for that?
Absolutely. It's so important not to have a dogma. So when they come, I usually, like when I do a journey for children, also this power animal journey, I don't tell them I'm going to bring you a bear, whatever, a dragon, a tiger. I lead them and I let them see. What do you see? So they can really see already. They have a saying in all of that. It's so important that we don't restrict the children in their spirituality, because it's a natural. It's a natural gift they have anyways. It's just like reminding them that they have the capacity. And but they like to belong to a certain kind of, not a group, I wouldn't say a group, but if they have the feeling they have certain powers, for example.
Like belonging to a tribe?
Yeah, like a tribe. Mm-hmm. Exactly, that's a good way. It's like they belong to a tribe. So like when they come here and they see these photos, for example, of, I have several, like the indigenous people of Peru, or maybe you have some of North American, a Cherokee tribe, or even belonging to the groups who can talk to dragon, a dragon rider, or whatever. They like this image. And usually they choose what they want to be. You just need to ask them, how do you feel? And then they, in this kind of journey, they suddenly see something, for example. And they see so much more than grown-ups. It's amazing.
Yeah, and among shamans in general, rituals and this, certain rituals for growing up have a certain, or a big meaning actually in growing up. Can you tell us a little bit about certain rituals that are like for, becoming a woman as a girl, or becoming a man? What kind of rituals do exist? And also, how do you think we could transport this into like modern life?
Yes, well, there is there are rituals, and there, of course, there's, you have, in many traditions, you have many, many different rituals, but there is a basis which you basically say you come from the boy to the man, the young man, the girl to the young woman, which is really easy for a woman, because for the woman, it is as soon as you get your period, your menstruation. That is, in these days, very important for the girls to celebrate this, become a woman. Because maybe you know that, but like in ancient days, it was like, you don't talk about your period, you don't talk about this, it's something dirty and whatever. But it's not.
Yeah.
Because it's something to celebrate. You are going to be part of these women now, of the young women, fertility, motherhood later. But this is like one of the initiation is that. And that, for example, I do this very often. It's like I'm giving them a moonstone. And this is I celebrate this as something very important, important step. So then you would have the next step is like becoming a woman later. And it doesn't necessarily mean you need to be pregnant. This is a different initiation. But becoming a woman, meaning you go into this phase where you create your life as a woman, your job, your family, whatever you're doing. And then later, the next initiation would be motherhood, if you have children. And then later you will be the wise woman when you go into menopause. Mm-hmm. And for the men, it's similar. Like the boys in other traditions, the boys have to go into the forest and stay there for 3 days with the elders or alone or whatever. So you need to have an initiation. So nowadays, we can do this in a way like helping the boys that they take responsibility now. And this, I have a lot of teenage boys, they enjoy having this journey where we go into the underworld, we go into this forest and rainforest, you see the tribe, and you will be part of this men now, like being a warrior practically. So they can see themselves, and then in this ceremony, you cut a bit of your hair, and you burn it, because that's a sign of losing the children's hair and starting to be a responsible young man. For example, this is just an initiation to mark the certain steps of your life.
And how would you suggest to do this in modern life, for example, as a parent, like going, do you have a suggestion? Like, for example, maybe going camping into the woods or something, or with your daughter. What are suggestions that you could suggest?
Yeah, for example, a mother could always, when the period or when the menstruation starts, you do a little ceremony, sitting there, light a candle, and you hand over the moonstone. You can buy a moonstone or an amulet with a moonstone, welcoming her into the circle of women. And the men, they can either go with a father or another uncle or friend of the family, a man going into the woods, for example, spending the day there, surviving in the woods, doing something. So just a little anecdote. My son wanted to initiate himself. We were in Spain. He was 15. And he just said, I'm going to climb on that mountain. And I was a little afraid because it was kind of far. And I thought, he said, I need to do this. But I felt he wanted to grow into this manhood. And he walked at 5 o'clock in the morning. And by 2, he was still not back. So I was, of course, a little worried. But then I said, okay, I let it go. I allow him to do the ceremony. And he came back 5 or so, he was away 12 hours, came very proudly back, left his sock on the top of the mountain, and he had a bush of rosemary as a proof that he was up there. And he said, now I did this all by myself without your help. So he kind of wanted to get away from this mother protection and do something manly.
That's very nice. I really like that. Now, just one more thing, going back into these times of uncertainty and also conveying information to children or also to teenagers, I realize that there's more and more a big gap in society between big controversies and big also different opinions about how to deal with this pandemic situation, also about it itself. And now I don't want to get into a political discussion and your opinion on this, but what I wanted to ask you is how to deal with children or teenagers who come up with question and not understanding what is right. Because I feel like there is a big need among people having an absolute answer. So that's my question. How would you deal with this, especially as a parent?
This is, of course, always quite difficult because the influence of peer groups, of media, is very strong. And if you, in your family, you have a certain opinion about something, you are also influencing your children. But you can also be the pole, the pillar which helps them to form their own opinion. Because I think, especially with teenagers, they are, of course, awakening and reflecting, and they trying to find their own truth. So maybe it's very important for us parents to really provide information of different angles and show children it's very important not to see only one side, but to see always both sides. There's always two sides to any issue. So really invite our children to listen to their gut feeling. So if what they feel is right, and not just saying, okay, that's not right because it's my opinion. So because that's very often children are not, or let's say not children, I'm talking about especially teenagers. I think they're entitled to their opinion, and they're much more informed than maybe in my age, because we didn't have all the social media. We didn't have all this information. There's too much information sometimes. I have the info because there's so many fake infos. They have to learn to be critical, to listen, but to be critical when they hear something. And that I would always offer to talk openly about things and trying also to learn not to be dogmatic.
Mm-hmm. So would you also suggest to accept that there is maybe not an absolute, just one answer to things, and that there is an uncertainty? Because I think that this is also a challenge in these days, just knowing that we maybe don't know everything yet.
Absolutely. we can't know. The only thing we know, and I think it's very important to remember, and you hear it from all traditions, nothing really lasts forever. Not the good, not the bad. We have this moment now, but it changed. Everything is constantly changing. So if we know that everything is changing, then we also know there can't be an absolute truth, because it's changing. What is true today can be totally out of fashion tomorrow.
So the only stable thing is the change.
Absolutely. That's true. Exactly. So I think, but the children, they need to learn this, because there is nothing. They really have to learn to surrender. To surrender to the fact that sometimes we can't do anything about it. Sometimes we can do something, but we always have a choice. I think that's so important, that we always have a choice, because we have the choice how we see things. Even if we cannot at the moment do anything right now, but we choose how we want to deal with it. Saying, okay, maybe I can't do anything today, but I will work on something so I can do something maybe tomorrow, next week, next month.
Right. So that's a very nice conclusion. Thank you for that. You have prepared a little journey for younger people, for children, or maybe also for teenagers. What is that about? Is it also for adults? Can we also take part in it?
I think it is totally possible. Of course, I adapted it so it's easier also for younger children, but it's not really for small children. It's like, I would say for like, I mean, you will know how your child is, but it's like maybe from 8 onwards, 8, 9 onwards, 10. So there's some children who can do it before. So I will do another one for smaller children. Maybe I do 2. I will see next time. So
okay. Thank you. So I'm looking forward to your journey and looking forward to talk to you next time. Thank you, Annette.
Thank you, Anna.